Hello, this is Nicolene Ambrose with the Tri-County Journal for Wednesday, January 6th. First article, Douglas County Board approves 2021 budget appropriations and levies. By Kendra Hennis. Douglas County Board members met for their monthly meeting on Wednesday, December 16th at 9 a.m. All board members were present, with Board Member Ed Luth joining for his first meeting following his election win. The board approved a number of resolutions in the meeting, including Resolution 20-R-40, the annual budget, appropriations, and tax levies for 2021. With this, the County Board Finance Committee, Chairman Don Munson, and other appointed officials compiled a list of expenditures for fiscal year 2021. Expenditure-specific amounts for the individual annual tax levies include County Tax Levy, $1,157,000, Tort Immunity Tax Levy, $1,080,000, County Highway Tax Levy, $429,000, Board of Health Tax Levy, $429,000, Social Security Tax Levy, $300,000, County Aid to Township Bridges Tax Levy, $215,000, Federal Aid Matching Tax Levy, $215,000, County Retirement Tax Levy, $0, Workmen's Compensation Insurance Tax Levy, $100,000, Extension Education Program Tax Levy, $60,000, Veterans Assistance Tax Levy, $0, Unemployment Compensation Insurance Tax Levy, $0, Tuberculosis Tax Levy, $9,000. The resolution states that the monies received by the county treasurer from taxes and other revenues for the use of Douglas County within fiscal year beginning December 1st, 2020, the following sums of money as set forth herein, and be the same hereby appropriated for the county's purposes in and for the fiscal year beginning December 1st, 2020, and ending November 30th, 2021. Adjustments will be made as necessary and approved monthly at the full county board meeting and published within those minutes. Following, they approved Resolution 20-R-42, extending the declaration of emergency in Douglas County for 30 more days due to COVID-19. The state of emergency was declared in the county on March 18, 2020. The declaration allows Board Chairman Don Munson to have authorization to sign documents and call an emergency meeting. The declaration also allows the board to continue to live stream their meetings on Zoom while still being within the Open Meetings Act. The board then approved a contract extension for public defender T. Janine Garrett for a one-year term beginning January 1, 2021. They also approved the appointment of Chana Ray as interim EMA director until March 17, 2021. The board then appointed Kevin Breen to the Douglas County Ag Center Board of Directors for a three-year term, as well as Dr. Virginia Wade to the Douglas County Health Board for a three-year term. The meeting ended with an update from Douglas County Health Department Administrator Amanda Miner with the Health Department's annual report. Miner reported that the DCHD has a lot of services, not just those that are COVID-19 related. The DCHD also handles dental, immunizations, blood drawing services, nail cutting services, and so much more. However, Miner noted that there were a lot of changes this year due to COVID-19, including no patients in the office and a large number of COVID-related services required in the county. She reported that thus far the DCHD has completed over 26,000 tests. These are currently being completed in a drive-through setting at the DCHD's new spot in the outlets of Tuscola between Old Navy and Vanity Fair. Miner also notified the board that the DCHD should soon begin receiving shipments of the COVID-19 vaccine. She said that healthcare workers, first responders, and residents of long-term care facilities will be given priority in the first wave vaccine immunization. Candidates for subsequent waves are likely to be people at high risk for severe COVID-19 illness due to underlying medical conditions, people aged 65 or older, and other congregate populations, though state officials continue to fine-tune these lists. Miner noted that once the vaccine becomes available to everyone, the DCHD is planning to do a large drive-through COVID-19 vaccination clinic. She also commented that the vaccine is an emergency use vaccine and it will have side effects. They are your body's defense to building it up. She ended thanking everyone in the county for being able to come together to help one another during these times. The board also approved the minutes of the November 18th regular board and November 30th special board minutes. Approved the transfers and/or emergency appropriations. Approved the payments of the county's financial obligations. Approved the reports of fees of county offices. Approved Resolution 20R41, approving increases in appropriations in the fiscal year 2020 budget and appropriations bill in reference to the Coronavirus Aid, Relief, and Economic Security Act, or CARES Act. Approved Resolution 20R43, authorizing execution and amendment of Federal 5311 grant agreement. Approved Resolution 20R44, approving bridge construction contract. Approved Ordinance 20014, establishing a risk management plan for calendar year 2021. Approved an extension of contract services for property evaluation and tax advisors. Authorized the county clerk to close fiscal year 2020. Announced that they would be accepting applications for the EMA director. The application will be available soon and following interview dates will be set appropriately. Adjourned at 10:32 a.m. until the January 20th board meeting at 9 a.m. Next article. Douglas County Farm Bureau President's December Agriculture Update by Larry W. Dalla. Relatively dry weather has continued until late December, and field work continued until rain on December 12th. We got our last 80 acres of lime spread and those corn stalks chiseled. We put the chisel plows away, and our big tractor goes to the implement dealer for some maintenance work. Many dealers have preventative maintenance programs that feature cheaper parts and labor in the winter. Their mechanics stay busy and we get our tractors or combines looked at by a professional. There was still some nitrogen and dry fertilizer going on too. The temptation to keep working is strong, especially after recent falls when we were lucky just to finish harvest. Every year on December 12th, I remember the 2009 harvest. The 12th was when we finally finished harvest in that year of mud and wet corn. We got no fall work done, and spring was a struggle as we tried to catch up. We bought a second disc to speed the task of closing the ruts we made in the fall. At least from a field work standpoint, we are well situated for 2021. Our drainage tile projects were finished just ahead of the rain. The ground was ideal for that installation. We could drive anywhere and we wanted in the field without worrying about mud. As we mentioned last month, there is little water running in the existing tile. The soil profile is very dry going into winter. The U.S. Drought Monitor shows a large part of the country west of the Mississippi as severely dry and a tongue of drought into central Illinois. Precipitation for this winter will be important for our 2021 crop prospect. Both drainage projects we did this year had large main tiles we could hook onto. One was in a tile district that levies taxes to maintain that outlet. I researched the other main this summer. There was a tile district started in 1908 in this drainage area. The main itself runs over a mile and a half into the Kaskaskia River. Evidently, the tile mains were installed and the district went dormant after that because it no longer levies taxes. Most of the tile is in good shape considering it is 100 years old. Almost always, the old mains are undersized. 100 years ago, only a few drain tile got into the worst ponds were installed. We put a tile every 50 to 100 feet across a whole field, greatly increasing the volume of water in wet periods. We are fortunate the mains are in place. We are looking at another drainage project that has no apparent outlet without a new tile across a neighbor for about half a mile. That is both expensive and complicated to pull off. Getting the next owner to let you go across them isn't always a given. The last 24-inch tile we installed, a common size for a main, was $1 an inch to put in the ground. The coronavirus is in the news constantly, and agriculture is playing a role in the program to distribute the vaccines. These are shipped in dry ice to keep them, in some cases, very cold. Dry ice is solid carbon dioxide, and that is a byproduct of the ethanol industry. The fermentation of corn for ethanol produces carbon dioxide. That is captured and used to carbonate beverages and for other industrial uses. Now it is being used in the drive to make us immune to COVID-19. The ethanol industry has been hammered by the coronavirus shutdowns. With fewer miles being driven, there is less need for ethanol to be mixed into gasoline. Higher corn prices are cutting into profit margins as well. There has been consolidation in the ethanol industry, and some plants are shuttered, perhaps to be permanently shut down. One of the farm magazines had an article headed, "Meeting Season Goes Virtual." Winter is usually a time of many meetings and farm shows. The Illinois Farm Bureau annual meeting is ordinarily 4 days of resolutions, sessions, talks, and presentations. This year, it was boiled down into about 6 hours of online activities over 3 days. Originally, it was planned that delegates from each of the 18 Farm Bureau districts would gather in central points so at least the district could have in-person discussion. Ultimately, most delegates participated from home if they had a good internet connection. I was where so many farm meetings occur, the kitchen table. The meeting went remarkably well. The electronic capabilities we have made something like a virtual meeting possible. The staff at Farm Bureau made it work and even set up a method to vote for district director in the even-numbered districts. One of the Illinois Farm Bureau's priorities is to expand affordable broadband over the state. I have reasonably good internet, but many areas do not. The need for virtual schools has highlighted these shortcomings. Some of the rural electric cooperatives are participating in broadband expansion, following up on bringing electricity to farmers 90 years ago. We have settled into our winter routine. We have cut brush and fixed tile when the weather is decent and work in the shop when it is not. The third tractor this winter is in the shop presently to change oil and filters and do minor maintenance. We have already hauled one bin of beans into the elevator. There is some grain moving as prices have moved higher after harvest. The same factors as earlier this fall are at work in the grain markets. World supplies of grains are not as big as originally thought. Russia is contemplating an export tax on wheat to keep domestic prices down because of a short crop there. Some parts of South America have gotten rain, but the first crop corn in some areas is already damaged. Many of the prognosticators assume that it will rain at some point in the crop growing areas. They have not had a good general rain, however, and they need rain throughout the growing season. China continues to buy commodities. It is thought to restock their reserves of feed and food. It will be after Christmas when you read this, so I hope that was enjoyable, and I hope this new year is happy and less eventful than the last. Thank you for reading about Douglas County agriculture this year. Next article. First wave distribution of COVID-19 vaccines underway in Douglas County. Vaccines are time-tested, life-saving resources that have been keeping disease and illness at bay for more than 200 years. Gloucestershire physician Dr. Edward Jenner is largely credited with having the first such research and findings documented and published by a credible scientific body. Consider these passages from the History of Vaccines, an educational resource by the College of Physicians of Philadelphia. Quote, evidence exists that the Chinese employed smallpox vaccination or variolation, such as the use of smallpox material was called, as early as 1000 Common Era. It was practiced in Africa and Turkey as well before it spread to Europe and the Americas. Edward Jenner's innovations, begun with his successful 1796 use of cowpox material to create immunity to smallpox, quickly made the practice widespread. His method underwent medical and technological changes over the next 200 years and eventually resulted in the eradication of smallpox. Louis Pasteur's 1885 rabies vaccine was the next to make an impact on human disease. And then, at the dawn of bacteriology, developments rapidly followed. Antitoxins and vaccines against diphtheria, tetanus, anthrax, cholera, plague, typhoid, tuberculosis, and more were developed through the 1930s. The middle of the 20th century was an active time for vaccine research and development. Methods for growing viruses in the laboratory led to rapid discoveries and innovations, including the creation of vaccines for polio. Researchers targeted other common childhood diseases, such as measles, mumps, and rubella, and vaccines for these diseases reduced the disease burden greatly. So here we are, poised once again on the precipice of medical history, as two COVID-19 vaccines, the Pfizer, BioNTech, and Moderna, are currently being distributed worldwide, and several more are waiting in the wings for their anticipated authorization. Because there will, at first, be a limited supply of vaccine, initial immunizations will be focused on specific groups of people. At this time, that means frontline healthcare workers, first responders, and residents and staff of long-term care facilities. However, the general public should be able to get vaccinated in a matter of months. When that time comes, will you be rolling up your sleeve? And if not, why not? Listed below are some of the common concerns related to the vaccine and science-based responses. First concern, I can't afford to get the vaccine. Response, at this time, there is no cost to you to receive the vaccine. While insurance companies, Medicare and Medicaid will be billed, anything not reimbursed will be covered by the Department of Health and Human Services. Next concern, can I get just one dose? Response, you do need to receive both doses of the currently available vaccines in order to have the full protective benefits from the virus. If you receive the Pfizer vaccine, there will be at least 21 days between doses, and for Moderna, it's at least 28 days. Testing has shown both vaccines to be approximately 95% effective when taken as recommended. Current research indicates that level of protection kicks in approximately 1 week after the second dose is administered. Next concern, I'm afraid the vaccine will give me COVID. Response, you will not get COVID-19 from the vaccine because it does not contain a live virus. Next concern, I'm afraid the vaccine will mess with my DNA. Response, the vaccine will not alter your DNA. While it gives instructions for your cells to make a spike protein that will attack the coronavirus should you become infected, it does not get into the cell's nucleus, which is where your DNA is stored. Next concern, what kind of side effects can I expect? Response, most vaccine recipients experienced no side effects related to the vaccine. Of those who did, the most common, both in clinical trials and with a public vaccination campaign, have been arm soreness at injection site, headache, and fever, typically lasting 24 to 48 hours. The majority of those experiencing these report them to be mild and similar to what any vaccine might cause. There have been a handful of instances in which the Pfizer vaccine caused breathing difficulties in the recipient. Because of this, Recommendations are for anyone with a history of severe allergies to consult their medical provider before being immunized. Having the vaccine administered in a clinical setting in the unlikely event that an adverse reaction ensues is also recommended for these patients. Moderna vaccine on its way to Douglas County. Douglas County's first allocation of vaccine is en route, and as previously mentioned, it will be going to specific populations. But so as not to have any possibility of vaccine waste, DCHD is creating a waiting list of people interested in being immunized. Should the initial supply be greater than the numbers of targeted populations, those on the waiting list will be notified of availability. To be included on the list, you will need to fill out a brief survey, the link to which can be found on the December 24, 2020 DCHD Facebook page post. And vaccinated or not, it remains crucial that you continue to wear a mask, practice social distancing, and regularly wash your hands. If you are experiencing any COVID-like symptoms, do not go out in public other than to get tested. Testing is done at the DCHD Tuscola Mall outlet site Mondays and Thursdays from 8:30 a.m. to 4 p.m. No testing on December 31st. Please have your insurance information and ID with you at that time. Next, the obituaries. Dean Vandeventer. Dean Vandeventer, 90, of Tuscola, died at 12:15 a.m. on Friday, December 18th at the Champaign-Urbana Nursing and Rehab Center. A celebration of Dean's life will be held at a later date. Clara M. Jenkins. Clara Jane Hood Jenkins, 84, of Arcola, passed away on Friday, December 25th at Carriage Crossing in Arcola from complications of COVID-19. Private services were held on Monday, January 4th at the Edwards Funeral Home. Reverend Don Winch officiated. Burial was in the Arcola Cemetery. Memorials may be made to the Cunningham Children's Home in Urbana. Deanna Y. Kallenbach. On Saturday, December 26th, Deanna Yvonne Kallenbach of Monticello, known as Bubba to those who loved her, passed away at the age of 82. A celebration of life will be held at a later date. Hillegoss Schrader Funeral Home is assisting the family. Sandra M. Clausen. Sandra Marlene Huckstep Clausen, 83, of Arcola, passed away at 9:01 p.m. on Thursday, December 17th at Sarah Bush Lincoln Health Center in Mattoon. Funeral services were held at 3 p.m. on Monday, December 21st at the Edwards Funeral Home. Pastor Dennis Cunningham officiated. Burial was in the Arcola Cemetery. Visitation was 2 hours before Sandra's funeral. Mary Lee Manzella. Mary Lee Manzella, 71, of Tuscola, passed away at 4:24 p.m. Thursday, December 17th at Carl Foundation Hospital, Urbana. Mass of Christian burial was held at 11:30 a.m. Tuesday, December 22nd at 40 Martyrs Catholic Church in Tuscola, where Father Angel Sierra officiated. Burial followed in the Tuscola Township Cemetery. Visitation was held from 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. on Tuesday, December 22nd at the Hillegoss Schrader Funeral Home. Memorial donations are suggested to St. Jude Children's Research Hospital in Memphis. Kelly C. Adkison. Kelly Christine Adkison, 26, of Tuscola, passed away suddenly on Sunday morning, December 20th, as a result of an automobile accident. Celebration of life services were held at 1 p.m. Saturday, December 26th, at the Tuscola Church of the Nazarene, with Pastor Joe Carter officiating. Burial followed in the Tuscola Township Cemetery. Visitation was held from 11 a.m. on Saturday until the time of the service at the church. Memorials are suggested to Hands for Paws in Tuscola. Hillegoss Schrader Funeral Home is assisting the family with the arrangements. Luann Richardson. Luann Richardson, 64, of Arthur, passed away at 5:38 p.m. on Thursday, December 24th at Sarah Bush Lincoln Health Center in Mattoon. Celebration of Luann's life will be held at a later date. The Edwards Funeral Home is assisting with arrangements. Irvin A. Yoder. Irvin A. Yoder, 84, of Arthur, passed away at 6 a.m. on Tuesday, December 22nd at Decatur Memorial Hospital. Private family funeral services were held on December 26th, and burial was in the Arthur Cemetery. The Edwards Funeral Home assisted with arrangements. Due to current circumstances, the family will be hosting a celebration of life gathering later in 2021. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made to the Illinois Amish Heritage Center. Patricia Hackler. Patricia Patty Hackler, 81, of Arcola, passed away at 2:03 p.m. on Monday, December 21st at Carl Foundation Hospital in Urbana. Private memorial services will be held at a later date. The Edwards Funeral Home is assisting with arrangements. Memorials may be made to the Church of Christ at Kemp, Illinois, or the Arcola Food Pantry. Arthur B. Urban. Arthur Burt Urban of Atwood passed away at 6:52 p.m. on Thursday, December 17th at St. Francis Medical Center in Peoria. Next article. Only three new laws take effect in Illinois starting January 1st. By Sarah Manser. When a new year begins in Illinois, there typically are dozens, if not hundreds, of new laws going into effect. Not this year. Like so many other things in 2020, the legislative spring session was stunted by COVID-19. Once the global pandemic reached Illinois in March, the General Assembly would meet for only four more days, wrapping up the odd session during masked and socially distanced gatherings at the Capitol and Bank of Springfield Center. The fall veto session was scrapped altogether. As a result, only three new laws will take effect on January 1st. Here's a look at them, as well as the next increase in the minimum wage that will be applied Friday. First one. Insulin costs cap. Senate Bill 667 amends the Illinois insurance code to cap out-of-pocket insulin costs at $100 per month for all patients using state-regulated insurance plan, regardless of the amount of insulin or type of covered prescription insulin used to fill out the insurance patient prescription. Second law, use of DNA in missing persons. House Bill 2708 amends the Missing Persons Identification Act to allow law enforcement agencies to obtain a DNA sample of a missing person or a DNA reference sample from a family member's DNA once a missing person report is made. And the third, keeping victims' addresses confidential. House Bill 2818 amends the Address Confidentiality for Victims of Domestic Violence Act by including survivors of sexual assault and stalking in the Illinois Address Confidentiality Program, which offers survivors protection from their abusers by allowing them to acquire and use a substitute address instead of their real address. In addition, minimum wage increase. The minimum wage in Illinois will rise from $10 per hour to $11 per hour on January 1st. And that's it for this week's Tri-County Journal. This has been Nicolene Ambrose reading with you. I look forward to reading with you again soon. Stay safe.